John Busby with the Culture Buzz. And I tell you, I'm excited as a kid who knows he's going to get the Red Ryder BB gun at Christmas time that he's not supposed to have because it's the one thing he always wants. I'm talking with Marty Grothy. He is one of the great people in my life here as the Culture Buzz. And he has been kind enough over the years to give me wonderful interviews, mainly because he has some of the most wonderful reading material you could ever hope to use. You know how life always gives you with it? Gosh, I wish I had a good quote. Dr. Marty Grothy is the guy to give you those good quotes. Marty has become a good friend, and he has been sharing some creative mischief that I've just been busting at the seams to share with you. The time is right. We finally get to share it. He has come up with a new book, and this book is a dandy. Deconstructing Trump. And actually, that is the website, too, where you can get your copy, deconstructingtrump.com. And I'll mention that a couple of times in the course of the conversation. But we're going to find out from Marty kind of where this nascent seed started sprouting and just simply became an overwhelming manifestation that he simply had to make into the book, Deconstructing Trump. Marty, so great to have you back on the Culture Buzz, my friend.
Well, John, I don't know if I can match a Red Ryder BB gun, but I'll do my best.
Well, you know, I want to find out, you know, that whole kind of history, how this whole thing coalesced into a wonderful book. I have been, ever since we first met, oh gosh, over 10 years ago,
at least.
I've been drawn to your ability, your kind of mission of life to categorize, not just collect good quotations, but categorize them, give backstories, give understandings, and most importantly, be absolutely accurate with these quotes, because I'm like so many other people. I love to be able to have a good quote at my command when I'm giving a presentation, when I'm sending a note or something like that. And you are my God in that realm right there. But talk about this new book.
Well, first of all, I appreciate that latter point you made because my estimate is that about one third of the quotations that people find on internet sites are in error. So, you know, I'm just trying to make sure that people are using the right quotations when they're quoting somebody, and I'll tell you, it's been a passion for about 25 years now.
Well, the nice thing is you predate the internet, and I know you probably don't have a hair left on your head from pulling it out when you've seen the way misinformation just runs like a wildfire through the internet.
Yes, yes, indeed.
Well, talk about Deconstructing Trump, because the first time we chatted about this some time ago, I was just drawn and fascinated by this, because I have to believe that your command of quotations, people in history, and everything else started kind of coming into a blurry focus at first, and you realized that so many just pithy bits of information from previous authors, poets, leaders just started saying, hey, we have these warnings that are coming at us.
Yes. Well, you know, I've written, prior to this book, 8 quotation anthologies, and, you know, basically in all of them, like, I Never Metaphor I Didn't Like, or Metaphors Be With You, or Oxymoronica.
Oh, God, I still chuckle at those titles. They're great.
Or Vive la Repartee. Basically, what I was doing was I was exploring figures of speech, and you know, once I came out with my last book, you know, I'm in my 70s now, I thought, yeah, I'm not sure I'm ever going to be writing another book again. And lo and behold, I have. And most writers cannot tell you the exact moment that a book was born, but I can.
Uh-huh.
And it's really kind of a fascinating story. It occurred in August of 2015. I don't remember the exact date, but it was almost exactly a month after the Iowa presidential forum was held before a group of Republican faithful in Ames, Iowa. and an unconventional upstart candidate named Donald Trump was being interviewed by a very respected Republican host named Frank Luntz. And yep. In that interview before, I don't know, several thousand GOP faithful, Donald Trump made that famous remark about John McCain not being a war hero. And, you know, it stunned the crowd. Because, you know, this guy was not just the, you know, the previous, presidential aspirant. I mean, he really is a kind of GOP icon. And I watched it that night. I'm sure your listeners kind of remember.
Yes.
The crowd was not particularly pleased with it. And afterwards, almost all of the other contenders for the nomination, you know, Cruz, Romney, almost all of them, Santorum, they all suggested that Donald Trump should actually get out of the race. And, I mean, they really came down hard on this guy. And so about a month later, I happened to be reading a 1965 translation of a famous Molière play titled Tartuffe.
Mm-hmm.
And as I'm reading along, I come across a passage. The passage is maybe 20 lines long, but the first two lines of the passage were, "Those who have greatest cause for guilt and shame are quickest to besmirch a neighbor's name." And I read that and I thought to myself, wow, that sounds a lot like Donald Trump. I mean, that was just a thought that came into my mind. And just to be certain that this 1965 modern translation was accurate, I went back to find a 1908 translation of the same play. And the first two lines were rendered slightly differently, but they said the same thing. They went, "Those whose own conduct's most ridiculous are always quickest to speak ill of others." Well, you know, as I was reading these lines, you know, there was something deeply satisfying about seeing a contemporary figure who I had long held in disregard described so accurately by someone who was writing, you know, more than three centuries earlier. And, you know, I just made a mental note at the time to kind of be on the lookout for similar quotations like this in the future, but I really paid very little mind to this because, you know, I thought at the time, like so many other people, that, you know, Donald Trump was going to be a very short-lived phenomenon. And over the next several weeks or several months, I came across a couple of other quotations that just sort of stood out at me in the same way. And I remember one of them was from, you know, Thomas Carlyle. And excuse me for a second. I've just got a little frog in my throat.
It's okay. I'll get a chance to interject here. Folks, we are visiting with Marty Grothy. He has a command of quotations and the backstories and the accuracies with those quotations as no other person has that I've ever met. I don't know if there are any other people in the world that has this kind of command, but from what you just told me about Molière, this created this kind of Trumpian lint trap that you couldn't shut off because all of a sudden things started popping up, right?
Well, yes, that's true, but that didn't happen yet, John.
Oh.
I mean, this was just a little funny idea I had in the back of my mind, like, oh, those are interesting. They kind of remind me of Donald Trump. I think I'll keep an eye out for more in the future. Well, a couple of weeks go by, and I find a couple of more quotations, and these, almost stopped me in my tracks. I was reading something written by Thomas Carlyle, and he said, "No sadder proof can be given by a man of his own littleness than disbelief in great men." And that was like, whoa. And then to really put me into another realm, just again, doing my normal everyday reading, going through books and trying to find interesting quotations, I found a quotation from Plato's Laws written in the 4th century B.C. And just relax now, sit back, and let me share this quote with you, because this quote almost knocked me off my feet. Plato says, "There is simple ignorance, which is the source of lighter offenses, and double ignorance, which is accompanied by a conceit of wisdom. And he who is under the influence of double ignorance fancies that he knows all about matters of which he knows nothing." Well, I read that, and I immediately said to myself, I've got to create a Trump file of quotations.
Yes.
Because that's all Donald Trump did during the rest of the primary campaign. He bragged about how great he was and how much he knew, and all of the thought leaders in the Republican Party, thought he was a clown. I don't know if you remember this, but in January of 2016, 19 of the most respected intellectuals in the Republican Party, Mona Charon, Eric Erickson, Thomas Sowell, William Kristol, wrote articles in an issue called Against Trump. And they all basically described him as an ill-informed populist. And in fact, I think the front of the magazine called him a menace to American conservatism. So I created my little Trump file just because I thought it would be kind of fun to collect quotations like this. I wasn't planning to do anything with them because I was absolutely certain that Trump would never get past the Republican primaries, much less win the election. Well, we know what happened.
Oh my goodness!
This was one of the most stunning events in human history. I mean, this made Dewey defeats Truman, Truman defeats Dewey, Dewey defeats Truman back in 1948, look like nothing. What happened is that after Trump won that election, I began to, I guess the most accurate way to describe it is I didn't cope very well with the idea of a Trump presidency. I as he got closer to his inauguration and then after he got inaugurated, I was not sleeping that well. I was not laughing as much as I normally laugh with my friends. I was drinking a little more, I think, if the truth be told. And, as a psychologist, I was showing all the signs of sort of sinking into a little bit of a depression. And, I've been in depressed periods before, earlier in my life. When I was in college, I sunk into a depression. And my way out of it, at the suggestion of my college counselor, was reading the works of great literature. There's a word for this. It's called bibliotherapy. And so I said to myself, maybe I've got to just return to this idea of quotations from great thinkers that I've already discovered have spoke a little bit about the reality of Donald Trump, and maybe that might help me now as I begin to try to cope more effectively with the reality of a Trump presidency.
Exactly. Marty Grothy is my guest. I admire his work just so much, as has everyone that I've introduced him to and people that know his work. www.deconstructingtrump.com is where you can go to find out more about this incredible book. You can pre-order, and of course you can order there once it is released in September. Marty, just trying to put it in my terms, I think what you experienced was a social PTSD, and creativity was the only way that you could combat that, because I've worked with a number of artists in music and in writing that are veterans that have used creativity as a means of coping, and I don't blame you one bit. We are going to be the beneficiaries because you are masterfully taking what is out there and going beyond the strength of so many well-written op-eds that are out there, but you've expanded into a book and you've got this chorus of great voices over the millennia that are really making a case for what is happening right now, it seems.
Well, thank you for saying that. Once I made my commitment to embark on this kind of deep dive into world literature, and this occurred, early in the Trump presidency, and again, this is just a personal self-help project as far as I was concerned. I had no idea this was ever going to, do anything except help me maybe. And I would say a week or two after I made that decision to embark on this little intellectual voyage, I began reading The Brothers Karamazov, this, classic 1880 novel written by Fyodor Dostoevsky. And one of the reasons I read the book is I remembered from, decades earlier that the patriarch of the family was a character who actually kind of bears a strong similarity to Donald Trump. He's kind of vain, he's kind of insecure, he's a little bit buffoonish, he's prone to gratuitous lying, and so I thought that would be a pretty good book to start with. And so little did I know that, within a couple of chapters of getting into the book, these great lines from great writers would jump out at me. And so let me just indulge me for just one second.
I will.
As I tell you about the Karamazov. So I'm reading it, and there's a scene in which Fyodor Karamazov, the father, is talking to one of his son's spiritual advisors, and he asks this father, Zosima is his name, what do I have to do to inherit eternal life? And Zosima looks over to him and he says, well, first off, people should not lie, especially to themselves. And then he says these exact words. He says, a man who lies to himself and listens to his own lie comes to a point where he does not discern any truth either in himself or anywhere around him.
Wow.
I mean, how could this be happening? I'm thinking to myself. These are people who are writing centuries before this man arrives on the political scene, and yet they are describing him to a T. And in that same chapter, and this is just a slightly longer quote, but I think your
yes,
listeners would enjoy it, Father Zosima concludes with these words. He said, a man who lies to himself is often the first to take offense. It sometimes feels very good to take offense, doesn't it? And surely he knows that no one has offended him, and that he himself has invented the offense and told lies just for the beauty of it, that he has exaggerated for the sake of effect, that he has picked on a word and made a mountain out of a pea. He knows all of that, and still he is the first to take offense. He likes feeling offended. It gives him great pleasure, and thus he reaches the point of real hostility.
Wow.
Well, now I'm not sure. I'm not sure psychologically, you know, what was happening inside of me. But when I read words like these, and I would go on to read similar passages like this in Tolstoy and some of the other great writers, you know, I thought to myself, you know, this is kind of interesting. These people who are writing centuries or even, you know, millennia before Trump are describing him so accurately that clearly there are people like Donald Trump who have appeared, you know, many, many, many times throughout history. And so that just kind of propelled me forward, and I developed this great enthusiasm for finding quotations, and boy, they came out of the woodwork. And, you know, some of them were deep, you know, philosophical quotations, like, you know, the ones we're talking about from Dostoevsky.
Yes.
But, you know, do you remember Peg Bracken? These are like some modern writers now. She said, life is so very simple when you have no facts to confuse you.
Oh.
That went into my collection. Virginia Woolf said, if you do not tell the truth about yourself, you cannot tell it about other people. Jane Austen said, vanity, working in a weak head, produces every sort of mischief. And so I was having a ball collecting these quotations, and I didn't tell anybody about my project, not even my wife, Catherine.
Oh.
I mean, this was just a little simple exercise I was engaging in, my bibliotherapy exercise, and I continued to do this for the first 2 years, you know, of the Trump presidency. And very, very gradually, my depression lifted.
That.
And many of these quotations, you know, none of these quotations were, of course, about Trump.
No.
But they had what we might call a Trump illuminating quality, and they kind of help to describe some of the profound changes in the American culture that were happening under this new 46th president. In 1932, FDR said about the presidency, he was in the middle of the election for his first term, and he was about to win. And he was talking about the presidency, and he said, the presidency is not merely an administrative office, it is preeminently a place of moral leadership.
Yes.
And then he went on to explain, all of our great presidents were leaders of thought at times when certain historic ideas in the life of the nation had to be clarified. Well, just reading those remarks from FDR in 1932 got me thinking, in this current era, is there anybody that would describe President Trump as a leader of thought? Is there anybody that would describe the presidency today as a place of moral leadership? I mean, now that thought is so ludicrous, it would be laughable if it weren't so tragic.
You know, what's interesting, Marty, and boy, I could use my entire show, and maybe we'll have to revisit this several months after the release of your book, because I think we should.
That would be fine. Yeah.
You have captured, you developed this privately, and you nurtured this to the point where deconstructing Trump, the Trump phenomenon through the lens of quotation history, is going to be a fantastic book, folks. It's one that you're going to want to get not only for yourself, buy several copies. You're going to want to hand these out to your friends willy-nilly because, Willy and Nilly can both get a book, okay? But I am just jaw-dropping amazed at the way you so masterfully find all these relevant perspectives and you have a clarity from such a high vantage point. It's almost like you have a Nassau type lens you're looking at things through. And your ability to weave these quotations into a very meaningful perspective in deconstructing Trump is amazing, Marty. Folks, you got to get the book, deconstructingtrump.com. Marty Grothy, he is one of the great writers and quotation experts in the world, and you will appreciate this. Marty, one parting shot, I give it to you.
Okay, oh, this is a tough one. I've long had favorite quotations, and one of my favorite quotations has always been from Harry Truman, and he said, "Not all readers become leaders, but all leaders must be readers."
Yes.
And of course, we know now that Trump is not a reader. But when I was researching this quote, I found that in 1962, John F. Kennedy was reading Barbara Tuchman's The Guns of August. It was a book about the First World War, and the book so impressed him that he invited Tuchman to the White House, and he made her book required reading for all of his aides. At the time, Theodore Sorensen said he made sure that all of us working with him had read that book and understood his concern. And here's my question to your listeners. Is there a single person in the entire world who can imagine a similar scenario in a Trump administration?
We will leave that hanging there, give plenty to think about. In the meantime, folks, go to www.deconstructingtrump.com. Get your copy ordered right away. Get your copy in your hands. You will savor every single page that Marty Grothy has written. Marty, we'll touch base again real soon, I hope, okay?
John, thank you so much for your interest. I do appreciate it, and I look forward to chatting about this topic again.
You got it. Take care, my friend.
Thank you so much.